Welcome to the Herd Quitter Podcast. I'm your host, Jared Lumen. On this show, we talk to farmers and ranchers who aren't afraid to think for themselves and do things a little bit differently. We hope these guests will challenge you to look at your farms and ranches in a new way and result in a more profitable and enjoyable business for you and your family. Hello and welcome back to the Herd Quitter Podcast. I am excited for today's conversation with a friend of mine, Rochelle Meyer from right here in Southeast Minnesota. I've had her husband on, I want to say it was back in like episode 61, Jordan Meyer. But these two are just crushing it with what they're doing at their farm. They're, you know, young and they have an awesome growing family and they continue to try new things and expand their operation and their farm down there. They've done everything from pastured chicken, laying hens, turkey, hogs, sheep, goats at scale, cow-calf, stockers. You know, they're trying and have done it all, and I just love hearing what they do. And so we've got Rochelle on today to talk about it from her perspective and to share about a few of the new things that they've done as of late. It should be a really good episode, and I hope you enjoy it. Little update on what's going on up here in our farm. If people are interested, we have been dry as a bone for a long time. Spring of 2023 was some good moisture, but we had an extremely dry rest of our 2023 and came in through winter the driest, least amount of snow, warmest winter that I've ever seen in my life. And finally, we are getting some snow and a chance of rain tomorrow. So I'm hoping this is a bit of a turning of the tide and we get some moisture going forward to get us the grass growth that we're needing, because it's been kind of a long stretch of 3 years of abnormally dry years, and it's been interesting trying to experience how to best manage through that, but I'd rather not. But before we dive into today's episode with Rochelle, I do want to take just a moment to tell you about my sponsor, Barn to Door. My wife and I have been using Barn to Door now for several years. They really are fantastic. They make it easy for us to manage all of our direct sales, both online and in person. They've helped us to increase our sales for our farm business. And if you're looking to build a successful farm business with best-in-class training and support, I'd encourage you to check out Barn to Door. You can go to www.barntodoor.com/herdquitter. And there you can learn a little bit more about what we've done with them and our success through them. And if you choose to sign up, you'll actually get access to a free academy session. That's a $99 value. The website again is www.barntodoor.com/herdquitter. But now we'll jump into my conversation with Rochelle. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as I did. And as always, thank you. Feel free to share this with anyone you think might benefit from the podcast and like and rate. Give us a 5-star rating. But I just really appreciate you listening. And thanks. And we'll dive into the conversation. Hey, Rochelle, thanks so much for joining me and welcome to the Herd Quitter Podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been looking forward to this one. For folks who are listening, this is Rochelle Meyer, and I actually had her husband Jordan on. I looked it up earlier. I think it was episode 61. Yes, episode 61. So about 100 episodes ago. So it's been a little bit, and a lot has happened in those 100 episodes. So I'm looking forward to learning a little bit more about your operation. And then the big question that I'm excited to dive into is just how you do it all, because you guys have a lot going on. But before we get into that, maybe go ahead and get started with just who are you? What do you do? Just to give us all a little context on that.
Yeah. So my name is Rochelle, like Jared had said, and I farm with my husband, Jordan, in Southeast Minnesota. We are as far Southeast as you can get. Like,
yes.
We're 10 miles from Wisconsin, 10 miles from Iowa. Like, we are far, yes, Southeast. And so we farm with our 7 kids. We've had a couple kids since Jordan was on, yeah. I bet a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So we farm, and then we also farm with his dad. So we have what I like to call a regenerative conventional dairy farm with his dad, and we milk 160 cows. And then on the side, Jordan and I, we sell grass-fed raw milk, grass-fed beef, pastured pork, pastured poultry, and then we also have sheep and goats.
Yeah.
So in a nutshell, that's a very quick overview of kind of our operation.
Yeah. And if you're good with talking about it, I think the one thing that, you know, when you talk about all those, it sounds like a lot of farms have, you know, a few sheep, a few goats, a few whatever, and a small dairy or something on the side. When you get into something, you tend to jump all in. You don't mess around. You're running several hundred goats and several hundred sheep, and talk a little bit more about, the context of your farm sites too. It's kind of a unique, reasons and why you jumped into some of those different animal species that I think is really, really smart that I'd like to dive into.
Yeah, so a long story long, back in 2015, we had an opportunity to rent a farm north of town, and it was a 500-acre farm, and that farm wasn't necessarily getting sold on the like organic crop side, but it was he just wasn't spraying anymore. So
Sure.
we could jump right in organically, and it just made sense. So we started there with just doing, your typical organic row crops, you're integrating, your winter rye and all the things, and the farm just kept turning to grass. And we kind of wanted to head down more of the regenerative path anyways. We didn't like the no-till model, similar to you guys. We just thought tillage just wasn't benefiting our farm in any way. And so Jordan and I went to a soil health summit back in 2018, and we went up and we listened to Gabe Brown and John or Jay Fear was there, and I want to say Christine Nichols was probably there too. Just a lot of really good speakers. And we left there just excited to change. I joke that we left there and just jumped in, but we did. A month later, we got six cows. And then that following spring, we did pigs and chickens and turkeys and laying hens. We just did everything just because we saw how much it could benefit our farms. So as we, kind of continued down the journey, we started dabbling into some stocker enterprises. So we tried the stocker enterprise, and that has worked really, really well. And then we were doing some custom grazing. And then this last, actually, I should just say a month ago, there was an opportunity to buy some sheep, and it just fit that farm so perfectly. And Jordan and I have come to terms with we can only do so much. So if we're going to have an enterprise, if we're going to add something else in, it needs to be scaled because we need to be able to hire the labor force. As long as we know it's profitable, it makes sense for us. And we knew these sheep would fit this farm. We wouldn't have to supplement with stockers or do some custom grazing. It would just naturally fit this farm and more of the models we want to go anyways. And so sheep just seemed like a really good fit. And also on that farm, we have woods. So there's 300 acres of woods. And back in 2017, they clear cut logged the entire farm. And so then all this underbrush started growing, and it was like, goats just make sense here. I mean, never in my wildest dreams did I ever think I was going to have a goat because they say, if it can hold water, it can hold a goat. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to chase around goats. And then our vet actually just kept saying, you guys need to get goats. It would be perfect for that farm. You guys need to get goats. And then finally, I was actually the one to pull the trigger.
That's
I
awesome.
actually was like, Jordan, I just found 82 goats on Craigslist. And he's like, I'm like, we're getting them. And we got them. And so
That's
that's kind of
awesome.
like, if an enterprise makes sense to us and we run the numbers and like we run the numbers again and then we run worst case scenario and it's like, yes, this could work, then we just jump in.
No, and that's definitely something I've come to know about you guys is, if something works roughly on paper, there's no second thoughts, or you might think about it. You don't want to discredit or undervalue how much thought you put into it, because you definitely think about it, but you're not afraid to jump in when it does look like it makes sense. But kind of back to the beginning there, you guys, it's what I've really liked about what you do is it seems like you very much value land management and soil management. And like when you kind of that became a value of yours, it was like, this is what we're gonna do. I don't care if it's $7 corn, we could till it all up and put it into, make a bunch of money. It was you find ways to make it work. There wasn't like, we'd like to do that, but it's hard to make it pencil. It was, we're gonna find a way. And it included some things that were a little more different or unusual. And it sounds like the start was direct marketing. Is that right? Kind of the when you added pigs and chickens and all that stuff, that there wasn't a commodity market for that. That was a direct market.
Right. Those were all direct marketing. And that being said, the reason why was, yeah, it made sense to sell them specifically on a onto the consumer side because they're more profitable when you are. When you're raising pigs and chickens regeneratively, the numbers just make sense to not go onto wholesale or onto the commodity market. And so that model made sense, but we just wanted the extra diversity. And looking back now, I think laying hens really make sense in a lot of models. Even if you're not selling the eggs for a super premium profit, just that added fertility and that added extra, them eating all the worms and the fly larva and all the things that laying hens can do, even if it's just 50 chickens, like it does not have to be a lot.
No, and so part of the problem with those specific enterprises is their scalability. I mean, you talked about picking up a 500-acre farm. I mean, what at that time were you thinking? Like, were you trying to figure out how can we scale these type of enterprises over more acres, or did you know
No.
that wasn't going to work?
No, we knew with how fast, I mean, you can grow a direct-to-consumer business relatively fast, but the amount of pigs we would need to cover that entire farm, like we would have to be selling a lot, or even beef, you can run easily, 150 stockers on that farm. So it's like in order to sell all that beef, you would really have to be working hard on that direct-to-consumer business. I love our direct-to-consumer business. It's profitable for us, but my heart also lies in a lot of the farming and the farming practices and the regenerating the soils. And so it's like, how can we do that and maximize that? And it's there is a, direct marketing has a place too, but also just selling on the commodity market, we're totally okay with that as well.
Well, and I think that's probably an issue that almost, not almost everybody, there's some people who are just all about the marketing. They love that. But myself and a lot of people I talk to, and it sounds like you guys as well, really we want to be farming, and a marketing is almost a means to an end. If we want to be farming and producing, the premium that comes from the direct market can be the way to be able to farm full time. But, that's challenging, and for some people it's not even really what they want to do. So you were lucky, or not lucky, but you had decided that that wasn't something you were going to focus on scaling to the point. Like, there are some people who, Will Harris, who has 4,000 acres and direct markets everything. That's a route you can go, but if that's
Yeah.
not really your passion, then it's probably not the route to go.
Your passion has to be in it. And if that's not where your passion lies, like I always tell people, that's okay. Like you don't have to direct market your farm products in order to fa farm full time and have a profitable farm. Like you don't.
So you dove into stockers and things, and talk about that at first. Were you owning these stockers? Were you custom grazing,
Yep. So
cow
when
calf?
we
Where?
first started with stockers, yeah, so we first started with stocker cattle to fill that farm up. We had our cow herd. We had grown that to 35 cows and calves, and that still wasn't enough to fill that farm. So the first year we got 44 stockers just to see how that enterprise worked. It was just a way to like test the waters. It still made sense. We capped out that farm, and then it was a good way to see what their gains were going to be, learn a little bit about markets and what people are looking for. And that enterprise did really, really well for us. Then at the end of the year, we were able to sell those stocker cattle and we had all that stockpiled grass for our cows. And I think that first year we went into February still grazing. So we hadn't even fed hay to our cow calf herd. We're still grazing. And so the stocker enterprise really makes sense in a lot of areas. And that's kind of how we're going into this year. So this year we have our sheep. So I should kind of back up a little bit. So we also have another farm. We actually bought my home farm. So I didn't grow up farming, but I grew up in the country. And since then, we have transitioned my home farm. It was just in CRP to now it's 110 acres open, and we converted all of that now to grass. So that's an entire farm where we can graze on. So we haven't quite decided this year if we're going to run maybe stockers this year, if we're going to get some call cows, what that model is going to look like. But we're choosing a model where we can sell these cattle, whatever it might be, at the end of the grazing season, what we like to call probably end of September, so we can stockpile that forage for our sheep and goats, because it just makes sense to not be making, like you said, that expensive hay. I don't need to feed my sheep and goats really, really high dollar hay. And so if I can just graze, extend the grazing season, my animals are healthier, my soil is healthier, and I'm not pulling all that carbon. So it makes sense to kind of, for us specifically, because of our farms and how they're set up, to diversify that way. And that's how we have learned to cut costs and still kind of have different income streams without, risking everything into one.
And I interviewed somebody a few weeks or months ago now. The interview probably was from Iowa, who has stocker cattle and sheep. And I was like, the way he explained it, I was like, it actually makes a ton of sense. You don't really carry any cattle over winter, it sounds like,
No.
other than the dairy cows on the home farm and stuff. But the sheep, the small ruminants, they consume less. They're pretty low input, pretty tough, hardy animals. The cattle consume a lot of feed. It's expensive to feed them. And then when it gets to mud season, they're mucking up and mudding up a lot of ground. I mean, you can stockpile by sending the cattle away, and they're a great summer seasonal animal. You can put on some good gains, get some good profit off the ground, and then send them away at a decent time and stockpile forage for your small ruminants. That makes a ton of sense. I think it's a phenomenal model. It really seems to work well in that context.
Yeah, cows are a great way to manage your grass, without it getting too far out there. They're a great tool. Cattle bring in a whole different things, but sheep and goats specifically too, they add so much fertility that cows don't add. Most people don't realize this, but when goats are going into the woods, the amount of biology and other added fertility that they're bringing up from the woods, it has done phenomenal things to our pastures. And I'm sure the sheep will be the same way because they're going to eat things first that cows would typically eat. So they're going to be utilizing, your soil is usually lacking something. And that's why what people like to call weeds show up. So if these sheep and goats are eating weeds, you got to question, like, what are they adding back? What minerals and biology and fertility are they adding back into the soil?
No, I so that's a great point that we should talk a little more on, is that all of the advantages that come from sheep and goats, because there's a bunch. And you maybe talk about, I'll let you dive into a little bit more of the advantages of why you got into the goats and the sheep in the first place. Because I think most people, we all love cattle. We would love to raise cows. They're fun, they're enjoyable, they're easy to fence, easy to manage, but questionably profitable. So talk about why you've done what you've done with the small ruminants.
Yeah, so we kind of went down the goat route, like I said, because we had just the missed opportunity of all these wooded acres. They were logged, all this underbrush was growing up, and it's like it, you know, it's land that you're still paying for, but you're not using it. I mean, cattle can go in there, sure, but they will destroy woodland if you're not careful. You can flash graze them in there. They do fine. They're not going to eat everything goats eat, though. So it's taking things that are unwanted and turning it into something. You're turning it into babies and meat. And other enterprises. We've actually diversified our goat enterprise even further. So we actually have four different enterprises out of one enterprise, if that makes sense. And
Well,
I can
explain
talk a
more,
little bit
because
about that
I
too.
think it will.
Yeah. So our goats, they are 100% Spanish goats. So we sell seed stock from them. They are DNA registered goats. So we have the seed stock model. And then we also do a little bit of direct marketing. We work with this year we're going to be working with a halal butcher, and so we will be a halal certified farm and just be we'll sell halal goat meat. And you can the listeners can kind of look what up what that is, but basically it's they want untouched meat. So goats that aren't vaccinated, aren't pumped with antibiotics, they're not castrated, they're not dehorned, stuff like that. A lot of them don't even want ear tags on them. So that's another enterprise we have in there. And then we also sublease our goats. So people that are doing like a goats on the go model where they want to go and graze public and private land, they actually rent our goats from us. And so this coming year, I want to say we have almost half of them rented out already. Before,
That's
I mean,
so
it's
cool.
March, and we have half of them subleased out. They're contracted out for the entire grazing season. So they'll come back to us end of grazing season, and then we breed them, feed them through winter, and we just kind of do it all over again.
No, that's like when Jordan, I was talking to, was telling me about doing that. I was like, that is the coolest thing. I mean, you're raising animal, you're getting paid for someone else to raise your animals for you. Like, what? Somebody else is feeding them, taking care of them, raising them, and you're getting paid for it. That is phenomenal. I love your guys's creativity. And then just back to like the land thing. I mean, when earlier you mentioned like how I talked about the expensive feed, what she's referring to for the listeners is we actually did a podcast together on her podcast, which I'm going to give you the opportunity to plug later. We talked about that. But something else we talked about on that podcast was Like corn stalks in my context over here is how many people see corn stalks as just wasted land, or, wasted resource, or it's just no value to it, and they're just trying to manage it. That's your woodlands in your context. You have these 300 acres of woods that are providing no value, monetary value to you at that point. And just the fact that, the simple fact that you looked at how can we monetize this instead of like what so many people would just say, it's too bad that's that way. It's too bad it's not croppable. It's too bad it's not open land. That alone, that mindset is so important. The fact that you were just willing to consider something different. You had a little push from your vet too, which helps a little bit as well. But that's huge because now, I mean, I don't know if you want to dive into the profitability of this, but I mean, how many goats can you run in those 300 acres of woods? How much profit per goat? And especially if you have no summer land cost, associated with it because the ground is virtually free. I mean, do you mind sharing a little bit of the finances of that decision?
So I'll start with how many goats can we run? I bet on that property we haven't even touched half of the acres.
Wow.
And we have 400 does is what we have right now.
Yeah.
And so I want to say, like, with all of our farms and woods combined, Jordan and I kind of have thought that we could probably run upwards of 2,000
Wow.
goats.
Yeah.
Eventually they're going to eat all the underbrush. And that's where sheep fit in
Yeah.
so well,
Yeah.
because you're still going to have woodland. It's just not going to be as thick, dense brush. Sheep don't want to eat up on their hind legs. They want to stay,
Yeah.
but they still want to eat the browse, right? So that's where sheep will really fit in very, very well. Because once the goats clear a lot of this, I don't think we'll ever get rid of goats, just because I
Yeah.
can see in so many areas where it's like this pasture needs it now, or
Yeah.
this area needs it. But sheep can really fit in there then. They
Yeah.
can go and use a lot of stuff in those
Yeah.
woods.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of why we chose, sheep makes sense, for us. And same with sheep too. Right now, we could probably double our herd if we wanted to also run the other farm, the both farms with sheep. I don't know if we'll quite do that yet, just because we like the added flexibility. But going back to the goat model, I want to say roughly, each enterprise obviously has a little bit of a different profitability standpoint. On the grazing side, we probably make it's an extra $75 a season per goat of just leasing them out, right? We're not paying for feed. So
Yeah.
somebody else is paying for the feed.
Yeah.
We're just getting an extra $75 in our pocket,
Yeah.
roughly, if you're figuring, it just depends on how many goats they're taking, how long they're taking them for. But on average, I would say we're about $75 per goat.
Sure.
And so that's just that one model.
Yeah.
Plus, on average, each goat, I would say for our herd specifically, we're about a 1.3% kidding rate.
Yeah.
So each mom is going to have about 1.3 kids.
Yeah.
So you can figure very, very low dollar, $150 a kid. Now, if we're selling seed stock and it's a buckling, he's $600 by the time
Yeah.
we sell him about 6 months old.
Sure.
So it's just a model that it has a lot of variables.
Yeah.
But I would say roughly after expenses and stuff, we're probably coming out ahead, $200 a goat. We haven't run
Yeah.
real specific numbers. It's just hard because
Yeah.
having all those enterprises within one,
Yeah. How do you
it's just a
attribute
lot of
income?
numbers.
Totally challenging to do all that. But still, I mean, that's better margins than a lot of people on a cow, and they're a fraction of the animal and they're tiny. So, that's huge, huge margins. And I think that's so cool, and just the creativity. And then, like you said, I mean, the advantage now then is you're upcycling this land, you're turning wasteland, brushland into potentially grazable hillsides, and then you brought in the sheep to do that as well. It's really, really awesome. So like that, the sheep are a relatively new thing. Yeah, you just when they just got dropped off here, what, 2 weeks ago or something like
Something like that. They weren't supposed to start lambing until
that?
March 10th, and they were lambing when they came off the truck. So,
Yeah. Have fun. Yeah, that's how that
although we've
goes.
had a great winter for it, so
Yes.
we really can't complain. It's been an abnormally warm winter.
Yeah.
We just kind of had a little bit of cold, freezing rain, hail, and I think we dropped about 20 kids yesterday, and we bought six of them home and then brought three back over. So you know, for how many sheep that have lambed already, kitted. Here I'm
Lamb.
talking
Yeah.
about goats and sheep. It gets
Yeah.
confusing. I have
Yeah.
kids, my goats have kids,
Kids,
and
calves,
all of the
lambs.
things. But
Yeah.
yeah. So we've had a really good year with them so far. We probably aren't even a third of the way through lambing yet. So there's a lot that are going to be coming in. But so far we've had these mothers are excellent mothers. The mothering ability that these sheep have, it's been phenomenal.
Cool. Good. Yeah, no, I'm excited to see how that turns out. There's a bunch of us in Minnesota here rooting for you so that you can be the trials. So you can trial it and see how well it works. And the rest of us will be buying ewes from you once you prove out the model. I think it's got
actually
a lot of
Jordan
potential.
And I joke about that a lot. So we've really kind of taken this on. A lot of farmers watch us first. There's been a lot of people, even just in our area, we start unrolling hay, and then a couple years down the road, they'll ask us questions and then they start unrolling hay. Or we ran the Stocker Enterprise, and then every year, you know, there's Field Jordan's friends that's calling them. How did you do this year? How did you do? What are the numbers look like? You know, when should I, you know, should I get into this? You know, so it's like
I'm one of them.
We're paving the way for a lot of farmers in our area. And honestly, like we're willing to do that just because we can see, you know, the end, what's going to happen in the end. And that's, you know, that's the beautiful thing.
No, it's so true. Like, and for the listener, she's like, not kidding. These guys are like the pioneers of Southeast Minnesota, trying everything that seems like it might make sense. They'll just dive in, no fear, make it happen, do great. And then jump into the next one the next year or something. So I love it. And it's super valuable. And again, you'll have to make sure I remember to share your YouTube where people can check that out. But, we've talked about your direct market, and we've talked about the goats and their fit and their niche, and the sheep are coming in now sort of in the short term potentially to replace the stockers. Was there a reason why you chose to bring them in to replace stockers as opposed to just carrying on with the stockers as the main grazer?
Sheep are more profitable. So we ran some really hard numbers. So for a little bit of context again, right, we have the home farm here, and that is where our regenerative, what I like to call conventional dairy farm is. It's 160 cow dairy. Eventually, Jordan and I would like to turn this more into a grazing based dairy. So we would graze the majority of our acres. So at home here, we're also converting another 100 acres this year into grass. Yeah. That's the next also thing we're doing.
Yeah.
And we are dabbling into some numbers with the grazing dairy and how it makes sense. So with what numbers we have run, grazing dairy is most profitable. And then number two is sheep. So that is kind of why we have replaced the sheep with the stockers. They're a little more profitable. Yes, stockers have that great flexibility because you can sell them whenever you need to, but so can sheep. You can sell sheep. If it's a drought, if it's whatever, if you need cash, sell the sheep. And this opportunity was just an opportunity we couldn't pass up. They were the breed we wanted, the price we wanted, the herd size we wanted. So they just made sense. Now that being said, like I said, we still haven't figured out what we want to do with this 100 acres that we're converting into grass this year. We're for sure going to be doing some form of grazing dairy. We haven't decided how many we want to carry just because it's going to be newly seeded. And we don't want to, you know, ruin the pastures, but we also need to make sure that this enterprise is going to be profitable because we also are paying some higher dollar land rent on it. So we're still doing some more figuring on our end, but we thought sheep would be a really good supplemental income that we can just about bet what we're going to make on it.
Hey, Kit, bull sale season is coming up. Was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the Missouri bull sale.
Missouri Bull Sale will be our second sale. It'll be Thursday, April 4th in Springfield, Missouri. We've got a great lineup there, 74 Angus bulls, 42 Red Angus bulls, 15 South Pole bulls. South Pole bulls are very popular, and 16 heat-tolerant composite bulls, as well as 8 Herefords. Now, the Missouri Bull Sale is unique in that we deliver all the way up into Ohio, all the way over to Virginia, down to Mississippi, down into Texas. So these bulls can go just about anywhere. They are fescue tolerant. They were born, raised, and developed on fescue.
Awesome. Thanks. Looking forward to that. And now we'll get back to the show. One thing that I like what you guys have been doing too, and it's something that I guess I don't consider too often is the idea of building wealth and equity in livestock as opposed to land. And you guys are aggressively buying land when you can as well, which is a great thing. But like, you're focusing on buying cash flowing livestock, and that can be, you know, land, questionable how much of a cash flow move that is as opposed to a long-term appreciation play. And it's a good move. I mean, if you can afford it, then long-term, very rarely do people regret owning land. But, you know, you could have chosen to continue to scale custom cattle, which was a part of your story at one point, but you guys have always been pretty active in ownership of livestock. Has that been an intentional decision for you guys? Or
yes and no. I think too many people get too hung up on like, well, they're my cows. They're my genetics that I've chosen. Well, I've raised them, so I know where they've been. We're not like that. You know, we used to have a cow calf enterprise. Okay. So we bought our cows in very, very low dollar. They were low dollar cows. I think we paid $850 for pregnant cows across the board when we had bought into them. Mm-hmm. And we turned around three years later and sold them for an average of $1,400 a cow. Plus she had three calves in between, you know, so we are very willing when the market makes sense to buy and when the market makes sense for us to sell. Like, we're not strung up on like, these are our animals, like they have to be here till the end of time. But we also have seen a lot of value in owning seed stock or just, you know, your breeding animals in general and how you can be flexible when you need to be.
Well, I think it's just an intentional or an intelligent move to focus on buying those things. And just that if you try the first thing you buy to buy land, you have no assets working for you in your favor. It's really, mm-hmm. it can be tough to make those things work where you'll have a lot of equity working for you already when land opportunities come up and the flexibility you talk about too. I mean, if you don't own anything and your custom grazer leaves, or, you know, this is somehow the market doesn't work and the prices aren't as good or something. I mean, you've got assets that are working for you. I think that makes a lot of sense, but.
And we have seven kids, Jared.
Yes.
So we're thinking about the future, hopefully.
Yeah.
Right. Our end goal is to pass down the farm, you know?
Yeah.
Will all of our kids farm? Probably not. Do I hope at least one of them does? You bet. You know, I look at Jordan. It started out here with nine different cousins and he's the only one left. You know, so I would love for this farm to continue down the path. And so if we can have a multitude of enterprises, one of them is bound to like something.
Yes. Yeah. That's a good point. Diversity for the sake of hoping one of them. Yeah. One of your kids picks up an interest in them. That's another advantage. Yeah. I like that. But that's a good segue into the children piece of this too. And the labor aspect of all of this, because you have, like you said, I mean, nothing is, you don't do anything without doing it at some sort of a scale to make it work. You got 600, 700, 800 sheep, 400 goats, a bunch of dairy cows, and, you know, you're doing everything at scale. You have seven kids. Talk about scale. You know, how have you managed to do all of this with, I mean, you and Jordan and your dad, your father-in-law helps at the dairy too, but he's not too involved really with any of the other enterprises.
No, nope. So, Jordan and I, we first hired a high schooler for the first time. It was probably 3 years ago now. And he was just 13 at the time. And we just used him whenever we needed like some fencing or some extra things. And we just, the beautiful thing was he was so young that we could mold him into the exact worker we wanted him to be. He didn't like know how to check cows. We taught him that. So we could teach him the exact way we wanted it done. And so we've just slowly grown the labor force as we felt that we've needed it. So this last year we hired evenings out milking at the farm because we just found that other chores on the other farms, moving cows, stuff like that. Jordan really enjoys doing that. He doesn't enjoy, like, we like milking. I don't know that we'll ever give that up, but I don't love milking twice a day.
Yeah.
You know, so we would gladly hire out milking just so we can go and enjoy and move cows, like, or sheep or goats or whatever that might be. So as we've grown, you know, so now we have evening milkings hired out. And then this summer, we have those, I think there's four or five different high schoolers that, you know, want to have, you know, a job this summer. So we'll utilize them to move netting and, you know, help us move animals. And thankfully, one of our, my home farm, my cousin is actually going to help us and he lives right there. I mean, it's
Perfect.
literally
Yeah.
it's the neighbor. So he's
Nice.
going to manage that farm for us. Yeah. So
Yeah.
just finding, what works and what doesn't work. And then, we always bring our kids along too. A lot of people, don't realize that, but our seven kids are there with us all the time. And, our oldest is nine, but even her, she is a huge asset. She helps with the babies. If I have to go do something or get out of the Ranger, I have one
Yeah.
in the carrier usually, but there's always a toddler coming along. And
Yeah.
so she's there just, helping watch kids, helping keep everybody happy. She is such a brilliant kid, and she's so responsible.
Yeah.
And we honestly are so fortunate to have had her as our first kid because she helps so much. And our
Yeah.
boys too, now that they're getting older, Ashton, he's seven, but Jordan can go throw out an entire netting for the goats, and he can put it all up. So just letting your kids be more independent and just letting them do that stuff. And we pay them too. We gladly pay them.
Yeah.
And then they're a little more motivated too. So that has
Yeah.
helped.
I bet. No, that's awesome. And I'm happy just to hear, even like I feel like when I first met you guys, you were doing almost all of these things purely yourselves. I remember, waking up super early. You still wake up super early, but working all day, doing all these chores and stuff. So it's cool to hear you start to move from that. Not that you're getting completely out of the operator's mindset. You still want, I mean, you're doing this because you love farming, not because you love managing a farm necessarily. And so you're still wanting to be in the operator's seat, going out and building fence and being with livestock, but you're moving to this manager position too, and recognizing that really to make this scale, or for it to be a business and not just a crazy job, that you have to start to outsource some of this work.
Well, I think it's just being intentional. It's being
Yeah.
intentional with the life you want to create. Because if you
Yeah.
don't want to work 16-hour days for the rest of your life, then you better figure out how to not work 16-hour days.
Yeah.
And honestly, when we first started out, I'll be honest, there was a time where Jordan did work 16-hour days every single day. He didn't take a day off. Or if he got a day off from the dairy, he was at the other farm.
Yeah.
So, over time, even he has realized, I don't want to live this, I don't want to live like this forever,
Yeah.
because we only get to have our kids once.
Yeah.
We only get to live our life once. So we have to be intentional with the tasks that we're doing. Does this,
Yeah.
we started asking ourselves, does it make sense for me to do this task, or can we hire it out?
Sure.
And that's the biggest question that you have to ask. Does it make sense for Jordan to milk cows every evening? Probably not. Is there other things he could be doing that would make more money? Most definitely.
Yeah, no, I think it's a challenge that I've faced, is like the idea of paying someone to do something that I could do or I could enjoy doing, where it's like, yeah, but is that really where you should spend your time? I mean, you're worth a lot more than just building a polywire fence. And so, yeah, you have to make that shift until the day where you can get back to doing what you want because you have enough money, you can do whatever you want or something. But at least, yeah,
Yeah,
if you're in
but
the
it's
process
all
of scaling
about
a business,
balance.
yeah.
Yeah, like doing the things you love.
Yeah.
If you love moving the polywire, great, but maybe it doesn't make sense to move it every single day of the week. Maybe just
Yeah.
once a week, Jared, you should go move
Yeah.
the
Yeah.
polywire.
Yeah. Nope. That's probably okay too. Yeah. And no, balance is definitely something you guys have been focusing on, and you talk a lot about just intentionality with your lifestyle, and I guess talk more about that. I won't try and put words in your mouth. What all are
Yeah.
you, yeah. What
So,
does that look like?
yeah, actually, so back in 2018, I started learning more about mindset. So I actually took a marketing and mindset course, and I actually became a mindset coach myself. And through that, we have seen exponential growth on our farm, in our life, in our business, just because we have learned to be more intentional. And Jordan has followed his own path. He's followed his own journey. He didn't take the same course as I have. But we both have ended up in the same place, believe it or
Yeah.
not. Like, he does mindset totally different, but our mindsets align, if that makes
Sure.
sense.
Yeah.
Like, and that
Yeah.
is, I think, too, what has made our lives so much more fulfilling and successful, is because Jordan and I are partners in this. Like, I mean, I know it sounds cliche, but like, we fell in love in high school. We're still in love. We love being on the farm together. And so
Yeah.
when you have two people that have a common goal, like, I love farming, he loves farming, we both love having our kids out here, everything just aligns better. It just makes sense. And then too, like, it's kind of funny, like, I don't really like to vacation, he doesn't really like to vacation, we like to day trip, but that's about it. So
Yeah.
it's just funny how
Yeah.
We both agree on so many things. And then, so then we can live a more intentional life because we both agree we need to spend more time with our kids. Okay, let's hire some help today so we can take an afternoon off. Like it's
Yeah.
just funny how we both start feeling the same things at the same time. But in order to do that, you have to start being intentional with what you're thinking inside of your brain.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you think, I mean, do you think you guys always aligned in your values? It seems to me like when you found out about regenerative soil health and you know, it was an all-in thing. We're going to do this. We're focusing on grazing. We're going to make these models work. When it was like, we enjoy farming and we want our kids to be a part of it. You just do it. I mean, were you guys always in alignment on values? Was there some intentionality of having to create shared values, or do you think you always had those values? Does that make sense what I'm asking? I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's gonna sound cliche again, but we always were aligned. I mean,
Cool.
even looking back, so I did
Yeah.
not grow up farming. I grew up in the country, but I didn't grow up on the farm. So I
Yeah.
was 14. I'd ride the bus out to the farm after school and do chores with Jordan, and I fell in love. Like,
Yeah.
if I had a day off from school, or if, you know, I worked three jobs in high school. If I had a day off from a job, guess what I was doing? I was out here doing chores just because I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved the farm life. I loved being able to just take care of animals. And, you know, at the time we were, you know, we're helping with hay and corn and, you know, harvesting beans, like all the things. I loved everything. I just loved being outside in nature. And then when we started down the, like, the soil health path, I would say Jordan, he did most of the educating. He did watched all the YouTube videos. He is the
Yeah.
soil health guru. And then he kind of teaches me, and I'm not
Sure.
as good of a sponge as he is. I comprehend as much as I can,
Yeah.
but just because when I see that passion in him, it's like, this just makes sense. And then I've done my own research. I would say I'm more on the health and wellness side of soil health. He's
Sure.
more on the soil part of soil health, but they
Yeah.
both kind of mesh together.
Yeah.
And so that's why I think our values align so much. I love the farming, and so does he. Soil health makes sense because I see it on the health side, how it can keep my family healthier. And I also see how it keeps our animals healthier.
Yeah.
And actually, I have a health background, right? I went to school for nursing, so I'm a retired nurse at my young age because I
Retired.
just didn't believe in that anymore. But
Yeah.
so I think that's kind of why our values have always been aligned.
Sure. So then another question. It's been a long time now since I had Kat Weinert on. I don't know if you ever listened to that episode or not. It was actually one of my favorites. It was super cool. Her husband was working off the farm, and she was pretty much managing the ranch, a startup first generation ranch, while running her family. And she gave some awesome, kind of cool tips for how she actually like the logistics of raising kids while running a ranch pretty much by yourself. And I know you're not doing it all by yourself, but what about just like the logistical tips that you have for seven kids in a farm on three different sites and four, five, six different enterprises? Like, I mean, I would just like any logistical tips, experience for folks that are trying to raise families on diversified farms that you guys have found that work for you.
It's once again comes back to mindset. So when we first started doing this, I always thought you had to stick to the nap schedule. You had to raise the kids just like the books. I was that mom. You know,
Sure.
I was out of the farm, and oh, it's nap time. We're 5 minutes to nap time. We better get in the house for the nap routine.
Yeah.
That went out after the second kid, Jared.
Okay.
But honestly, I learned that you cannot control anybody else. You only can control your reactions. Okay. So if your kid is throwing a temper or tantrum, they don't want to come with, that's fine. But I can't control them. They get to come along. But it's literally like, I look at it like this. Like, it's your kid's job to test boundaries, to just learn about the world, because that's what they need. They need that experience. But it's just, how do we control ourselves while they're experiencing that? And once we kind of learned that you just have to be patient. Like, they're gonna throw the temper tantrums, they're gonna get overtired. Like, pack the snacks. Like, everybody will be happy at the end of the evening. We can all sit down as a family. It'll all work out in the end. And then just trust. A lot of it is trusting in God that you're doing the right things, that you're raising the family you should, you know, the way you should be raising them. And then just not being so darn strict, honestly. Like,
Sure.
it's okay if a kid misses a nap. It's okay if we're late for bedtime. There's going to be, you know, a couple temper tantrums thrown. So we know moving cows with all the kids is probably going to take an extra 20 minutes. And if it takes less, great. Just knowing all that, like what you're signing up for ahead of time,
Sure.
it makes it a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah.
And then too, it's I look at it like this, like I get to do this. I get to farm with my kids. I don't have to. Like I'm choosing to do this. So I think that having that outlook and that perspective, even when the kids are bad 99.9% of the day, that 0.1% that they're amazing, it makes it so much more worth it.
Yeah. No, that's a good perspective. I'm a huge believer in the importance of just your perspective on life. If you're not, I've seen people with the best of lives that live miserably because it seems like nothing, they can't look at anything with a positive outlook. And I've seen people with the worst of situations that seem to be the happiest people in the world. So yeah, perspective and mindset is huge. So yeah, no, just irreplaceable is a good mindset.
Yeah. And then going back to that too, right? It's just letting your kids have more independence. So when we're out at the farm, we call it Bart's farm. You know,
Yeah.
there's apple trees, there's raspberry bushes. Like there's things for the kids to do. Let them go explore.
Sure.
Mom and dad are going to go move cows for 20 minutes. Do you guys want to come with? Or do you guys want to go walk through the woods and we'll come pick you back up? Most of the time they want to walk through the woods, you know? So the
Yeah.
toddlers obviously come with us. The older
Yeah.
kids get to go play. And then at the end, you know, and so it's just, or if the kids want to help, mom, dad, can I drive the Ranger? Can I help put in stakes? Like it might not be done the way you wanted it to be done, but at least it's done and at least they were having more fun doing it. So I think
Yeah.
just letting your kids get more involved.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Man, is there anything that I haven't asked you about that's before we start to wrap up on your farm wise, all the stuff you got going on that's worth sharing?
Oh man, I think we could probably be here for days talking about
Oh,
farming.
yeah, no doubt.
But I think that's
Cool.
the gist of it and kind of a good
Yeah.
overview of kind of what it looks like. I mean, sure, we could go into all the regenerative practices we're doing on the dairy, but that would just be
Yeah.
a whole nother.
No, yeah. Can't get into it all, but I want to. I'm curious what have been some important resources for you in your life and your farming career that you think people who have heard what you have just talked about and want to do the same or learn that they should check out.
Okay, so for me personally, going to a soil health academy was very worth it. Jordan, he watched a lot of it on YouTube. He was kind of already seeing it,
Yeah.
but I really enjoyed going to a soil health academy, getting to like hands in the ground, do that. And that's kind of why like this year Jordan and I are hosting a grazing school on our farm just because
Awesome.
we know how amazing those hands-on events are like any pasture walks we've gone to, you know, where we can actually go see another farmer's farm and like, you know, I don't know how many years ago it was that you had a fencing building workshop at your farm, and secretly you don't know this, but the only reason we went was just so we could go see your farm.
No, I
But
knew that. Yep, I knew
that's truly
that.
what it is, you
Yeah.
know. And so like anytime you can get boots on the ground on somebody's farm, that's how I personally learn
Yeah.
best as far as the
Agreed.
soil health,
Yeah.
cattle management, you know, animal husbandry, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It just
Yeah.
can't be taught listening to a podcast or in a book or
Yeah.
on video. Like boots on the ground is the way to
Yeah.
go.
And probably something I would venture to say that you've learned more just doing it than anything else too. Even getting
Yes,
out on other
yes.
places, you just buy the goats, figure it out as you go, drop them off on the trailer, and then figure out what you need for them.
Yeah, there's like some statistic out there, like the average consumer or the average person, I should say, consumes like I think it's on average like 2 to 4 hours of just like consuming information every single day because there's just so much out in the world.
Yeah.
And so, how much are you creating,
Yeah.
right? Is it 2 to 4 hours? You know, that's like the doing, right?
Yeah.
So I like to look at it as like after I consume this information, okay, now I actually have to go implement
Yeah.
it, figure out what works, what
Yeah.
doesn't work, and what I'm going to do differently. And that's how you get the results.
Yeah.
Because what you hear somewhere might not necessarily work 100% for you and your farm. But if you can pick one thing that you learn and go and implement it, you are going to see probably 10 times the results.
Yeah. Yeah. I was listening to a different podcast on a totally different topic not too long ago. And I think they talked about something like the 70% solution or something, or they say essentially before you take action, I mean, get 70% of the way there. You want to have a rough understanding, but if you try to get to 100%, you will never get there. And that's the
Right.
whatever. You don't get things done, you don't take action.
Perfectionism and
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to get to 100% understanding before you actually take action, you will never get there. It'll never happen, and it happens all the time. Analysis paralysis, that's the word I was looking for.
yes.
And so, when you feel you're 70% there, you have a rough understanding, you've done the numbers, you'll just do it and you'll learn the rest as you go. I think that's hugely important. But cool. So where can people find you? Where can they learn more about what you're doing? And yeah, listen to you, your new podcast.
Yeah, so they can head over to themindfulfarmers.com, or else you can find me on the Mindful Farmers podcast that actually launched today, March 5th. So
Nice.
my podcast just launched. And then also I'll plug in Jordan's YouTube channel. It is a very good, great resource for
Yes.
farmers to kind of see what we're doing as far as farming wise, our enterprises. And Jordan just likes to create valuable content for people just to watch. So that's Wholesome Family Farms on
Awesome.
YouTube.
Perfect. Yeah, definitely. I enjoy watching his YouTube as well. But thanks so much, Rochelle. This is awesome. I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story and a little bit more about what y'all are doing.
Yeah, you're welcome.
The Herd Quitter podcast is brought to you by Faro Cattle Company, whose mission is to help ranchers put more fun and profit into their business. You can get more information on Faro Cattle Company at farocattle.com. And if you enjoy what you've heard on this podcast, be sure to subscribe and check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Herd Quitter Podcast or at herdquitterpodcast.com.